Hello and welcome to another edition of the How to Grow Your E-commerce Business podcast. I'm here with Alex Back from Couch.com, and Couch.com is an online platform for matching customers with their perfect couches. And Alex has built this and a number of other businesses, and we're going to specifically talk about how he's using AI to help build and grow his business. So welcome, Alex. And my first question to you is, what is artificial intelligence or AI?
Well, good morning, Trevor. Starting off with an easy one, I see. This AI, it's interesting you asked to define it, because it's something that everybody speaks about these days almost on a daily basis. As I understand it, AI is the process of teaching a machine to operate with human-like logic, to operate as if it were a human brain. And I think that we've found that this process has been very fruitful in many ways, to get machines and computers to use logical reasoning as if a human would, to make decisions, to produce things, and to do many things that affect us in our daily lives every day.
So does it have to, because I always look with these things, a lot of these things, they're very good at, I've used ChatGPT and stuff like that. And they talk about these things hallucinating. They are sometimes they're like an exercise in form over content. They'll just talk and they'll say things, and it sounds very good, but it doesn't really mean very much. So is it more of a kind of having the appearance of reasoning more than actual reasoning?
Well, it's funny you mention that, because isn't that the case in human nature to begin
that
with?
Is,
don't you find people
true.
As a podcast host will often go down that same path? But that's interesting. And I think it's interesting when you ponder that and you sort of think about that in the context of the definition that I just gave. We're teaching it to operate like a human. A human will often do a similar thing. And you sort of have to say, now, don't give me anything that isn't correct. I need you to fact check this before you say it. Don't just pull this out of thin air. But that's interesting, because it is quite a human trait to do that, to talk out of your where.
That is true. That is true. So is it, because I think a lot of, it seems to me at the moment, there's a lot of, AI is being touted as the panacea for everything. Everything's AI. And I do wonder about the people kind of project onto it attributes it doesn't have, and asking it to, giving it responsibility for things which it shouldn't really have, and just expecting it to do, marvelous things. And I think that, like anything else in life, there's a kind of shit in, shit out problem. Well, if you give it all these tools out there for creating product descriptions, but if you don't give it anything to go from, it's not going to be able to magic these things out of thin air. So we'll talk about that in a minute. So what's the difference between AI and machine learning? Because I really don't know if I think I know.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's a very nuanced answer, because machine learning, as I understand it, is a subset of AI. It's part of AI. If AI is the process of teaching a computer to mimic human logical reasoning, machine learning is quite simply teaching a machine to do that. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's mimicking a human persona, as some forms of AI do. We're not talking about, a robot that greets you and asks you how your day was, when, that would be a different form of AI, wherein a computer is taught to mimic human characteristics and personas, which is very common these days and part of ChatGPT's offering. But machine learning is more like an example in a similar realm would be like a machine to cook dinner for you. You're teaching a machine to use human-like logic to train itself to get better. A prime example is facial recognition, right? So just like if you're traveling internationally, you now stand in front of a camera and go through a quick facial recognition software pass with, at least in the US, Borders Customs agents will, make sure that you are who you are. And the more that machines learn about faces, the better the machine gets at detecting faces. It's not necessarily going to then turn around and saying, this, hello, how are you? You know, nice to see you today. Thank you for traveling with us. That's just a different set of AI that would be employed in that instance. Machine learning is, I think it's pretty straightforward. It's teaching machines to use logical reasoning to get better at what they do.
When you get into, because I understand, when you go to, I remember when you go to New York Airport, they always give you like a little bit of paper you have to fill in, which asks you if you're a Nazi and if you're a terrorist.
Hey, you know, in New York, we gotta, I'm from New York. We got to know who's coming into our city. Well, you know what I mean? Like, it was
like, yes, I'm a Nazi. Yes, I'm a terrorist. So can you give me some examples of how AI, you know, use cases of AI in the e-commerce space?
Sure. Well, I think the biggest use case is in two areas that I've seen so far, it being sort of widely deployed. One, content creation. There's no secret there. Everyone's sort of trying to gain an edge when it comes to content creation and getting ranked in search engines like Google. So to the extent that e-commerce businesses invest their time and effort in SEO, there's a lot of content being created in mass these days using AI tools because it's so easy to do. The second thing that I've seen the most in e-commerce, I think even more than that, is using sort of this concept of chatbots, which are now like sort of supercharged with AI learning technology, where they're getting better at doing what they've been trained to do, so to speak, as they go along, to provide great customer service and quick answers to people that are more intuitive than the chatbots of old. When I ran my e-commerce business even 5 to 7 years ago, we were, you know, we had sort of automated replies, but you'd have to literally map out every aspect and detail of that logic. It was a logic tree that goes only as far as your patience level to fill out a detailed spreadsheet to feed the program. But now you can sort of give it that spreadsheet and let it go within certain parameters to serve your customers in a quick way to get what they need without, you know, having to employ and deploy a human.
Okay. So would you, because I worry about with like the content, right? So everyone has access to these tools, broadly speaking, right? And undoubtedly, Google has thousands of people and billions of dollars of money to try and differentiate people who create better content. So how is it going to, and I've seen, you know, people who do, you know, things that do really well in search tend to be very kind of long form articles of the kind that, you know, very considered multiple pages and whatever of the form, which is quite difficult to create using AI. So is it just the case that you know, Google is going to get better at differentiating content and because the level of content, because there's going to be so much content out there, it's going to look at things that AI finds it hard to do?
That's absolutely correct. So I am very dialed into this specific subject matter right now. And I can tell you with resounding confidence that nobody knows the answer to this question about how things are going to rank and things are going to change. There is an immense amount of speculation, but this has thrown the content marketing space and SEO professionals into a tailspin because no one really knows what's coming. Nobody knows if quantity will work anymore and only quality or if quality will prevail. Nobody knows if you should be writing, you know, 1,000 articles about a subject or a single article that's extremely good. But the thought leaders that I trust and have been following really just talk about that EEAT principle of experience, expertise, authority, and trust, which is essentially, in essence, a definition of authenticity. And so that's what I'm trying to go for personally in building my new company, Couch.com. We're offering a lot of content to customers, and I'm trying to leverage my own experience, personal experience, and a lot of people that I know in the industry, friends and colleagues that I've had, in a similar fashion to how we're, speaking to each other now, to provide a lot of value to customers. So the best advice that I've seen so far is focus on what you're really, really good at, be as authentic as possible. And even though they don't have any data to really fully support this notion that this is the best way to go, logically, it seems that, you know, these things will be valued a little bit more. The personalized content from an individual, video content, user-generated content. If you notice, at least here in the US, Google searches for almost anything will yield now Reddit results towards the top, because that is quite literally all user-generated content and authentic in nature. Mm-hmm. So it's nobody really knows, in short, but it seems like going for a real authentic approach and being and valuing quality over quantity is the name of the game currently.
So is it do we need to actually be authentic or to fake authenticity?
Ooh.
That's a good question.
It's a good question. I mean, I think there's a lot, it's like, because then it's very existential, because it's like, okay, well, are machines smart enough? Is an algorithm wise enough to figure out if I am lying to the camera if I'm shooting a video, right? Or if, you know, I'm BSing? Like, that I don't really know. I don't think so. So then you really start to think about, okay, well, you know, maybe it's just the appearance of authenticity. Which has sort of been the case in SEO for a long time. People are just writing a lot of stuff about things that they know very, very little about. Most content marketers and that are very successful are not experts in their industry. And they will write, you know, they'll have entire websites based on, you know, there'll be a group of three men that have a mom blog is a perfect example that's very successful, simply because they're good at feigning authenticity or presenting it in a way that is palatable and reasonable, but maybe not the most authentic approach, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's the same old rules as ever. I mean, Google wants you to provide a good experience for the customer. And I suppose you've got to still do that. And maybe AI could just help you get there a bit quicker.
Yeah, I think so. So that's how, you know, we're using AI in, I mean, we've used it a lot in content creation, and maybe have cut some corners there with regard to writing, you know, good content or organizing content and, you know, creating outlines or questions that we will answer as the experts in the furniture industry. But there's, you know, two ways. Like, one, we're using an AI powered quiz to get information from users when they come to couch.com to ask them, you know, what are the variables that are most important to you when buying a couch? Now, it seems like a simple question, but I think once people dip their toe in, you realize there's a logic tree of hundreds of different variables, like timing. Some people need something tomorrow. Some people need something whenever. Budget. There's so many different, you know, different price points in the furniture space and couches. And then when you start to go needle in on all these variables that are most important to you. I need something pink that's great for kids and blah, blah, blah. The search power currently employed in the online space is not good enough to give customers adequate search results to actually help them find the couch that they want. So we are creating this AI powered quiz that has a lot of, we're teaching it a lot about where to find certain things based on what customers' input is, but we're relying on it to take it to the next level and make it a very robust experience that a human, you know, would have trouble delivering if someone were to talk to me or a salesperson, because it has so much more knowledge and information that it's at the ready. And two, we want it to be a personalized experience so that we're not asking people to use a filter that they have to, you know, select 90 different parameters. It's going to be more conversational in nature. So all that to say, this is one example, I think, of how we're using AI to actually provide a service or a value to the user.
So how do you go about creating content using AI and to produce something which is you think is an authoritative and useful, interesting piece of content?
It's a good question. I'll define my process for the hundreds of articles that we have on my own website. The process is we sort of start with an idea of a common question. I ran a furniture company for 13 years and, you know, was very deeply involved in the operations. And I understand fairly well what customers have, where the pain points are and what questions they have. So you kind of start with a general theme, like, okay, let's just take something that's extremely relatable. Cleaning a couch. Go say cleaning a couch. What are the things that people ask about prior to purchasing a couch about cleaning it? Pet hair, kids, you know, sun damage. There's just sort of a few things. So then you go and do some keyword research surrounding that to figure out what people or how people are interacting with Google and search engines to answer those questions. Usually they're in the form of a question like best way to clean cat pee out of a couch, ? Mm-hmm. And so we attempt to, you know, harvest from some of these keyword research tools, which questions are most commonly asked. Then we take those and sort of use our own expertise and experience to answer them. And sometimes we'll say, what are people saying on the internet about cleaning a couch? And we'll, you know, sort of do some research about what methods are being used. Oh, that's right. I forgot about the warm water and alcohol mixture one, for instance. And then we will sort of write, you know, add that to our blurb, whether we let AI write a sentence that we will edit or just give us an outline of ideas. We're using it to help us move in the direction of creating something cohesive surrounding a specific topic that we originally came up with, if that makes sense.
Okay. So give me, so you said your business, so it's content creation and quiz. Are they the two things you're using AI for?
Well, we have sort of this third arm, and in the furniture space, it's especially in e-commerce, it's incredibly important and fast emerging, which is in visualization. So I sort of running an e-commerce furniture brand, you know, since e-commerce furniture was a thing, we're always trying to gain an edge in showing our customers what to expect with a couch without having seen it in person first. And that's mm-hmm. really the biggest hurdle to cross when you're selling couches online, because people generally still want to see them in person before buying them. The idea is that in the past, the service providers and technology partners that we've had have sort of, they produce really cool experiences. Like when AR first came out, we're like, this is going to change the entire furniture industry. And it changed it a little bit, but it had nowhere near the impact that we thought it would. So one way I think we finally found value is a way that is powered only today by, you know, AI and this concept of machine learning. So what people are doing right now is using, you sort of like upload a picture of your room, or we actually are partnered with an application called Realize Design, where you are scanning your room with a mobile app. You just literally take pictures of the corners. It creates a blueprint of your room, 3D. And then you will answer a few questions about like what style you like and, you know, pick a couple of pictures and things like that, that appeal to you. And then it will furnish your room for you with real products that you can buy. Now, will somebody buy everything that the AI puts into their room? Probably not. That's probably a 1% sort of a thing. However, it may show you a dining table that fits perfectly in your space and actually fits your style aesthetic without you having to search and scour the internet through all of these sort of, you know, deep catalogs that you find on furniture websites across the world. So I think it's really a great way to show people what they're looking for.
Does this help conversion rate?
Immensely. So this is something I do know from my past that people that use the visualization applications, and you can argue that they are the most interested customers or they're already super engaged and they're going to buy something anyway. But the conversion rate numbers for people using these visualization applications that were even worse than the one I've just described, they were they were immensely more successful from a conversion perspective than customers who did not go through these experiences. So we had an AR application on the website that I used to run, and it was very, very underutilized. Like it was a 2% of the population would use this tool, but that 2% converted at 18 times what the rest of the group did. Now, again, you could say that that was the most engaged 2%, but 18% is a 18%18x conversion rate lift is a very, very compelling figure. So you have to think that it really does help. And we're just like on the precipice of something very good. And I think the modern tools that our AI is allowing us to create is taking us to that point.
So what do you think, is AI going to put lots of people out of jobs? Is it going to be, or is it just going to be give people, the people who do have, is it just going to mean people do more interesting jobs?
I'd go with B. I mean, you know, there's so many, I think it's going to just shake things up a little bit as it already has. Last year at some point around this time of year, I think it was Sam Altman from OpenAI, and he wrote sort of an open letter about AI. This is when it was first like really, really popular, and everyone's like, now wait a second, what are we doing? Are robots going to take over the world? And he sort of wrote this essay about how, no, it's just going to make us better as humans. And obviously he has stake in the game, so trust him if you want or not. But to me, that was all I needed to hear, because he gave real examples of things that ways that we would evolve as a human race. And it's not just in like creating content for the internet. We're talking like medical research and things of that nature. So yes, maybe that lab technician who is spending 100 hours doing something over and over and over again doesn't have their job. But after, you know, but someone's going to have the job of analyzing that data more deeply and going in depth further. So the jobs will be different, perhaps more interesting, perhaps not. But I think that there will, you know, there will be enough to go around. It's not like the machines are going to replace every single thing that we do. It's just they're going to do it in a more dynamic and interesting way that we have to adapt to.
Yes. I think, I mean, it's a bit like, you know, people talk about doctors and a doctor's going to be out of a job. And I think doctors are going to be just fine, because I think that they will have better diagnostic tools and they'll be able to spend more time discussing things with their patients. And so, you know, that they, you know, you would hopefully be able to give people a better couch for these services, or, you know, the customer service person can spend less time doing the really, everyday stuff, sure, and can spend more time actually helping people choose a better product. Hopefully that's how I hope it's going to go anyway.
Those are two great examples. I mean, if a doctor can just, we go to a doctor to give us trust, give us comfort, using their trust, and we want, you know, if the doctor's spending less time looking down and figuring things out and more time connecting with their patients. And yeah, I think that's a wonderful way to put it.
I don't know if you come across Atul Gawande, but he said the problem with medicine is not that we don't know enough, it's that what we have is not evenly applied. You know, hopefully it'll mean that this knowledge is more available to more people. So do you think that the AI is going to benefit?
Trevor, give me one second. I have an alarm going. Let me kill it and I'll be right back. Is that all right?
Yeah, sure.
Did I just screw this up? I'm so sorry. I got to get that alarm off. So sorry about that.
That's all right. It's probably the working from home these days is you just like, you know, okay, my daughter's going to come in a minute and someone's going to come to the door.
Pretty much.
So is AI, do you think that AI is going to benefit smaller or larger retailers more?
I have a dog in the fight, as they say, on this one, being a small business that's trying to take a big swing at an industry that is dominated by multi-billion dollar corporations. I feel that AI tools are going to allow me to compete as a small business with some of these larger players. The AI tools that I described in the last 5 to 10 minutes that we're using in Couch.com, once our platform is built, I think will be superior to some of the searching methods and capabilities of many, if not all, of the furniture retailers in the country currently. So I didn't need to, bring in millions of dollars of inventory to do that. I don't need to spend years creating content to compete with them. I believe that AI is offering us the ability to offer a superior product offering and value to a customer than some of these larger corporations. So I think that's just an example of a smaller business, a David going after a Goliath, and using technology to be able to do that, to empower us.
But do you think, okay, so they obviously, the big retailers, everyone's got access to these tools, right? So how, if they've all got, access to these tools, then undoubtedly they've got bigger teams than yours doing this, right? Is it just going to turn, is it just going to be turning this content into a commodity? And how are you going to differentiate yourselves when everyone has access to the same technology?
Well, it's interesting because, the company I used to run, is one thing about us that, kept us competitive throughout our existence and successful. We were much smaller than a lot of these larger entities in the furniture space. But for as large as they were, we were far more nimble. And with when new technology providers would show up on the scene, they would often reach out to us first to pilot their product or program, because we were the ones that were able to make it happen in a reasonably fast sort of way without going through all the corporate barriers. My company was acquired by a larger furniture company. So I know firsthand how a large entity can sort of trip over their own feet as they work in silos a bit too much and can't always organize themselves to go after something quickly. There's always an angle to play as a small business, in my opinion. I've had a lot of experience with that, so that's one of my beliefs.
Okay. So what do you, from your experience, what's the best way to combine human and AI capabilities? I mean, what do you think that AI can do that humans can't do, and what do you think the humans can do that AI can't do?
I think what humans can offer that AI can't is, I think we're still emotional beings, and there's so much being transferred between us in this conversation. I think human communication between one another is so incredibly nuanced that's something that's going to take a very long time, if ever, to be replaced. And I remember like old Star Trek episodes, like Next Generation, and there was something like one of the big ones where they talk about free will being like the thing that the robots could never embody. So there's something there, but I mean, I'm no data scientist. That's just my personal belief. And then in the context of what can machines do better that humans can never. I mean, intellectually, I think it's really right now, my mind goes to data analysis and aggregation. Where a bot or an AI instance may lack personality and specificity and communication, it makes up for in some ways with its sort of breadth of knowledge or access to information. How it processes speed. Information speed is so much faster than what a human brain can ever do. So hopefully there's a way for us to work harmoniously and the computers won't take over our lives. But I think we still provide that human element, like your doctor anecdote. It's like, we still want to feel that trust and comfort that a doctor provides to us, another human telling us everything's going to be okay. I don't know that, you know, a GPT application can ever make me feel that way if I have a, you know, a hard, difficult medical diagnosis type of a thing. But who knows? We don't.
I don't know. I think the doctor ones, I think, is interesting because I think that, you know, you got, you know, you can't, you know, I'm sure if you've got a medical condition, right? Then, I mean, imagine you've got a brain tumor, right? You can have it taken out. You've got 90% chance of success and a 10% chance of going badly wrong, you know, and there's just so many things to weigh up. And I think that's the kind of thing you'll always need humans for. So
yeah,
I think we'll end up with an awful lot more service. I think we'll end up with an awful lot more services. You know, people just hopefully enable people to spend more time doing important value added things as opposed to, you know, churning out content or something like that.
That's nice. I like how you just phrased that. That's great.
Yeah, well, you inspired me. I think I need to go away and learn more about this. I think I've got one last question for you. I like to ask a fluffy question at the end. What has inspired you recently outside the world of e-commerce and AI?
I draw a lot from sports personally, and I make a lot of parallels between sports and business. So I make sure that I watch sports. It's like sports storylines in the course of a game or a season. It's sort of very much like business and life. It's sort of like a sports game is sort of a microcosm for a lot of other things, you know, our life experiences. So I make sure to watch a lot of sports. This is not just an endorsement of me watching more games.
Exactly. This sounds like man rationalization.
Babe, just one more game. Come on.
I've got to have a beer with it. I like that.
No, I really do like that.
It's teaching me something about life, darling.
Well, watching, you know, we had a Super Bowl here this past week, and watching just a huge room of people banding around a certain storyline and seeing how impactful it can be, even though 90% of those people have no idea, no prior knowledge of the teams playing, of the players, of the storylines or anything. They were able to latch on to something that it was very real and human. And I think sports are just like a very sort of simple narrative that's easy to digest, that people can latch onto and relate to very easily, even with no prior knowledge. So I don't know, that's just something I was thinking about this past week and how it relates to, you know, what I'm doing and how to sort of make any content or storylines relatable to people. It's possible. People don't have to be sports fans to like the Super Bowl, is basically my point.
Okay, that's very good. Thank you very much. Alex, I mean, lovely talking to you. And perhaps we can meet up again when you've launched your business fully.
I would love that, Trevor. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.